This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. We've been talking about happiness in the U.S. I was debating that an hour ago with Julio Rivera. We are number 18 in the world in terms of the happiness index, and all 17 countries above us are all countries that, if you asked, would say, yes, we're democratic socialist countries where healthcare is absolutely free or largely free, and so is university education. In fact, many of those countries, you get paid to go to college or to trade school. And, you know, what was fascinating about that is my debate with Julio is, you know, why are all these countries above us? We're at number 18. During the break, one of my kids sent me another story about the exact same study, but looking at it through a slightly different lens. This study actually says, well, yeah, not only are we number 19, I think I said 18, it was number 19. Not only are we number 19 in the world in terms of happiness, but last year we were number 18, and the year before that we were number 14. So we're dropping in happiness worldwide. And this is a fairly comprehensive study. They're looking at GDP per capita, health, life expectancy at birth, social support from friends and family, freedom to make life choices, generosity and donations to charity, and perceptions of government corruption. And, you know, these are relatively objective measurements. It's not, you know, they didn't just walk up to people and say, you feeling happy today? Oh, check off the box. So, you know, we've got that. We've been talking about, and that's this happiness ranking. We've been discussing whether or not we should be censoring pictures of shooting victims. You know, my question, you know, Gabby Giffords, we saw some of the horror of that shooting. It's pretty much the only one that we've seen. We saw this during Vietnam. Emmett Till's mother made the decision to show the world what happened, what had been done to her son. Are the gruesome pictures? Now, not necessarily the body cam pictures from the killer, because that sort of glorifies him, but certainly the police photos taken afterwards of the people who had been shot. Should those pictures be out there? And so we've been discussing that for a while. Joe, there's word from the Joe Biden campaign, and Axios is reporting this, that he's thinking about announcing that he's going to run and that Stacey Abrams is going to be his VP candidate. So, you know, we've been talking about that, too. But I want to throw another topic in here, and that's Nikki Haley. This is kind of a variation on the discussion about, about happiness and the whole happiness index and, you know, which countries are happy and which are not and why is it. And I would say that, you know, having universal access to health care, having high levels of unionization and thus, you know, good job security and good pay, a high minimum wage, having active participation in democracy, having, you know, free college education, and having a strong social safety, all of these countries also have strong, what we would call social security programs, that those things all bring us happiness. And as we discussed earlier in the week, and I've got, you know, you'll find my article on this over at alternet.org right now, and I think it's also on Common Dreams and Truthdig. You know, it's titled something like, you know, what billionaires mean when they're talking about freedom. And, you know, basically, from a billionaire's point of view, freedom means no taxes, no regulations, which is the mantra that the Republicans sing. But for the average working American, you know, what does that matter? If you get a really substantial tax cut over time, your employer will just lower your wages. We've seen that over and over again. That when taxes go down on working people over the next 3 years, their wages go down because the employers know what they're willing to work for, basically without, you know, post-tax. And you know, particularly with big corporations, I mean, they finally calibrate this stuff. And you know, so, and doing away with regulations, I mean, that, in other words, there's more poison in our air, there's more poison in our water. How does that make the average person happier? I mean, it makes maybe the billionaires happier. It makes their businesses more profitable. But you and me, I don't get it. And meanwhile, here now, Nikki Haley comes in, and she lashed out at Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders tweeted, in the United States, it costs on average $12,000 to have a baby. In Finland, it costs $60. We've got to end the disgrace of our profit-driven healthcare system and pass Medicare for all. That's what Bernie said. And so Nikki Haley responds, and this is so amazing. Nikki Haley responds by saying, all right, Bernie Sanders, you're not the woman having the baby, so I wouldn't be out there talking about skimping on a woman when it comes to childbirth. Trust me. Nice try, though. And then she adds, healthcare costs are too high. That is true, but comparing us to Finland is ridiculous. Ask them about how their healthcare system is. You won't like the answer. Now, this is our former UN ambassador. You would think that she would have some clue as to how life is in European countries, particularly Northern European countries. The UN ambassador from Finland to the United Nations, Kai Sauer, responds to Nikki Haley's tweet with his tweet. Here are some facts. Finland has a high-performing health system with remarkable good quality in both primary and hospital care. The country also achieves good health status at relatively low levels of health spending OECD. Finland has the world's third lowest infant mortality rate. Maternal mortality is the lowest in the world in Finland, and Finland has the second lowest total mortality rate from cancer of all European countries. And then he says, finally, his fourth tweet, the ambassador from Finland to Nikki Haley is, apologies for the delayed reply, but we were out celebrating our rank as the happiest country in the world. Right. And then Christopher Springman, he tweets, life expectancy in Finland, 81.4 years. Life expectancy in the U.S., 78.7 and falling. Finland maternal death rate, 3 women die for every 100,000 live births. In the United States, 26 women die for every 100,000 live births. Upshot, Nikki Haley doesn't know jack about healthcare in either Finland or the U.S. Evan Handler tweeted to Nikki Haley, why not just tweet, I'm uninformed and dangerous, but I speak to millions, so take seriously what I say. Right. Somebody else said, imagine being as dumb as Nikki Haley thinks you are. Another one says, we skimp so much on pregnant women and the newborn that every pregnant person receives a maternity package filled with closed other goodies for the child for free. This is, you know, somebody from Finland is tweeting this. Lambert says, hey, I'm not finished, but I lived in Finland for 5 years. The healthcare system is effing phenomenal. That means great, by the way, and puts the crap you have in the United States to shame. I cleaned that up a little bit. Another one, Dana Hole tweets, 2018 poll of Finns who have had or used or had family who have used the healthcare system in the last year, 83% satisfied, only 15% dissatisfied. Are you satisfied with the American healthcare system? Another interesting thing I wanted to share with you, and then I'll pick up your phone calls here, is the latest email that I got from Donald Trump. And, I mean, this is, now, the media apparently I must be the only guy in the entire media in the United States who contributed $5 to the Trump campaign back a couple of years ago, because I'm still getting these things, and, you know, they're begging me for money all the time. In fact, this is for the official Stand with President Trump initiative. Please confirm your information below. Name, Fred Flintstone. Email, and it's got my email address in there. And then it's, you know, sign the official Stand with President Trump initiative in the next 3 hours to get on the first list we send to the president. Right. But here's where it gets weird. This went out to tens of millions of people. It's completely under the radar because it's email. It's not going to the media. The media is not reporting on this. But this is what this email says that I just got like 20 minutes ago from Donald Trump. Fred, the left is out of control. The Democratic Party has completely lost touch with reality and embraced full-blown socialism. It's clear that they only care about resisting, in quotes, President Trump, instead of doing what's best for the American people. The left-wing mob and their allies in the fake news media represent a very real danger to our nation. Now, this is the President of the United States in his re-election campaign sending an email to tens of millions of Americans saying that not just people like me, who are the, you know, arguably the left-wing mob, but Democratic politicians and your next-door neighbor, your Democratic next-door neighbor. Remember when the Rwandan genocide started and the talk radio guys were yelling, they're cockroaches, they're just cockroaches, you need to kill them like cockroaches. If you can make somebody believe that somebody else is not fully human, or represents a threat to them, a danger to them, then like the guy who had Trump paraphernalia all over his bus and sent bombs to basically the entire leadership of the Democratic Party just a few months ago, or the guy in New Zealand who says Trump is an inspiration to us who are trying to achieve a whites-only world, essentially. I'm paraphrasing wildly here. Repeatedly, you know, the guy who shot up the mosque up in the upper Midwest, the guy who shot up the church, I don't want to name these people, who shot up the church in Charleston, these were all people who were openly Trump supporters. And then Trump sends out an email to these kinds of people saying that the Democratic Party and the news media represent a very real danger to our nation. This is something we need to take very seriously. When a political campaign, I mean, you know, Trump has been saying the fake news is the enemy of the people. And I don't think that our response has been anywhere near strong enough. And now he's saying that the Democrats represent a very real danger to our country. There are people who believe the president simply because he's the president. Hey, he's the president of the United States. Is he going to lie to me? I mean, that's the mindset of a lot of people, particularly, you know, a lot of these killers have been people in their 50s and 60s. The bomber guy was, who was like totally in with Trump. And how much responsibility does Fox News bear in all this for continuing to support this guy as he's essentially calling for people? I mean, if you're gonna clean up a very real danger to our nation, and you're being called on to do that, what does that mean? Well, it means something different to everybody who receives the message. So what does it mean to a guy who's got, you know, 30 guns in his basement? This is serious stuff. Where the hell is the media on this? It's 18 minutes past the hour. We'll pick up your calls after the break. We've got a lot of topics on the table here. In addition to the news of the day, and in addition to now we're discovering that Boeing, if you want to know that your plane is malfunctioning, that's an extra fee. Seriously.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And capitalism wonderful. We'll be back. It's 18 and a half minutes past the hour. And welcome back, Nancy in Elkhart, Indiana. Hey, Nancy, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I have a view on the pictures of the carnage and things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the same age group that you are, and I also can remember, you know, sitting around a dinner table and watching the Vietnam War, where me and my parents were totally shocked.
Yeah, we saw some very gruesome imagery, particularly after Nixon's presidency, when the media just wasn't buying this stuff anymore.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going off to college where we were all talking about it and becoming the peace movers.
Well, and we saw really, that picture of that young woman crying over her boyfriend at Kent State, and he was dead.
Yes. And, excuse me. And then so, you know, we thought, you know, war should never happen, no matter where it was.
Right.
And then, you know, as we grew up and, you know, I became an educator, and those feelings went throughout our country. But, you know, again, as I can remember, as my students became the parents in my classroom, but then here comes 9-1-1. And then everybody started seeing that, and I see that's, again, where the terrible rise in guns, because I think everybody, when it's on our soil, I see why they didn't want to show things so terrible of bodies, because I see people then becoming people that want to say, oh no, now I have to defend myself
right, more
because the bodies are now on our country.
Right.
So maybe the press, I don't know. I'm like you. I don't know what should it be.
Well, this can be used
not.
for good or evil, Nancy. I mean, the simple fact is that we have seen in the last couple of years in our press, we have seen pictures of children who've been gassed, you know, with chlorine gas, with their skin all disfigured and, you know, their tongues all swollen and all this kind of stuff. I've seen these pictures in the media, but they were pictures designed to encourage us to want to go to war with Bashar al-Assad, the dictator of Syria, because they were children who he allegedly gassed. But when our ally Saudi Arabia is dropping these bombs that have the bomblets in them, I forget what they're called, but the little kids think they're toys and they blow their arms off and things. They're supposed to be illegal, but we're still making them, and we sold them to the Saudis, and they're dropping them in Yemen, and they're killing all kinds of people with these weaponry. We never see any of those images.
Of course not. And again, I'm totally confused. Would that make any difference to, let's say, the Trump followers?
I think it might.
Question is.
Go ahead.
Those are the ones that I worry about.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure they would be the ones that would say, "Oh, I'm so sympathetic to death." I don't know.
No, I think the disaster porn of 9/11, and let's face it, it was disaster porn. They played those pictures of the planes flying into the towers on continuous loop for weeks after 9/11. And Bush was and Cheney really, really used that imagery to get us ready for a war. We saw nothing like that coming out of Iraq or Afghanistan when we started dropping bombs on them. And I think what it does is it shows you the power, the impact of showing those kinds of pictures. And I rather than just seeing the carnage caused by our enemies, I think we need to see the carnage caused by ourselves and people who live in the United States, so these mass shooters. Nancy, thank you for the call. And we'll be right back. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. So an awful lot on the table here. Let me just toss one more thing in front of us all. The American Civil Liberties Union of Kansas, the ACLU of Kansas, is asking for a state investigation of the police in this little town of Tonganoxie. It's about 30 miles west of Kansas City. A fellow by the name of Carl Robinson bought a house in Tonganoxie. And he was moving into his house when the Tonganoxie police pulled up, pulled guns on him, and said, "What are you doing?" This guy was moving into his house. Oh, did I point out he was black? Surprise, surprise, as Gomer used to say. Lisa in San Francisco. Hey, Lisa, what's on your mind?
Hello, Tom. Long time. I haven't talked to you in a long time. Do you think Julio or Nikki Haley have seen Where to Invade next? I'm guessing not.
I'm guessing not, too, because that you're talking about Michael Moore's brilliant documentary.
Right. Or, of course, they'd probably say it was fake.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Those people look awfully happy in that, especially those Italians at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And even the Norwegians with their jails. I mean, it was incredible. Yeah.
Right. And their health care, all those things. We don't have time to be happy. I mean, people are struggling. Everybody's working too hard. And every time you turn on the news, cops are shooting people. We have the most guns in the world. How happy can you be? People are angry. It's almost the extreme opposite of happy here.
Yeah, and I would say extent that some people voted for Trump not for the racist element of it, and I think there were some. It's clearly not the majority, but the people who were not voting for Trump because of race were voting for Trump because they wanted change, because they were seriously pissed off at the way things are going.
Well, I think they're still pissed off.
Yeah,
I don't think it helped much.
Yeah, you're right.
And I was going to say, on the photograph, I think I would vote for seeing them. It seems like out of sight, out of mind kind of thing.
Exactly.
I think people, I don't know if it's been said, I stepped out for a few minutes. I don't know if I missed it. But, yeah, it seems like people might pay more attention. Everybody just kind of going on with their lives, and people are dying every day. And maybe like when the hostages were, every time you turn on the news at night, it was day 53. Day
oh, yeah, during Jimmy Carter's presidency, yeah.
If we announced every night on the evening news what day it was of this war going on for 15 years,
right.
Maybe people might...
Or how many people have been killed by guns that day. Lisa, excellent points all. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after the news at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, in Wisconsin, Scott Walker got pushed out, and they have a Democratic governor now. But on the way out, the Republican state legislators basically stripped that new governor of his power. A judge in Wisconsin just ruled that that's illegal. So that's, you know, kind of good news. And I'm pretty sure I mentioned earlier that there was this angle of attack indicator and an angle of attack disagree light that would tell the pilot of a Boeing 737 MAX if the indicator, if the pitot tube, if the device on the outside of the plane is measuring the flow of air, that is trying to warn the plane that the angle of attack, in other words, the tilt of the plane, the nose is too high kind of thing. If that is malfunctioning, because you can compare it to, there's multiple sensors, right? It's redundant. These are redundant systems. If one is malfunctioning and another is not, there's this warning light. It's called the disagree light. You've got two instruments that disagree with each other. And it basically tells the pilot, turn off the automatic pilot because this thing, the automatic pilot is going to fly you into the ground. And Boeing said to Ethiopian Airlines and to Lion Air, if you would like to buy these two safety features, they're going to cost you extra. In fact, the extra of the safety features can cost as much as 5% of the cost of the airplane. And so these two airlines both said, no thanks, we don't need those safety features that would have saved these planes. Why is Boeing selling these? Why are they not included in, speaking as a pilot, why are they not included in the price of the airplane? This is libertarian capitalism at its worst. Libertarians say, and Republicans say, you shouldn't have regulation, like a regulation that would say, if you have a safety device on your airplane, you have to provide it as part of the cost of the airplane. You should not have regulation because when terrible things happen, the market will correct itself. And sure enough, terrible things happened. You know, 400 or 500 people are dead as a consequence of a decision that was made at Boeing to increase profits. And Boeing is going to be hurt by that. And so, you know, to the extent that they're, you know, and Boeing is going to lose a lot more than the cost of those two airplanes. But does that mean that that's the way we should do things? We wait to take, you know, poisons off the market until people start dying from them? I mean, that's literally how we do it here in the United States. We have a debate, you know, Monsanto now, the second case of cancer where a jury said, yes, this man's cancer was caused by Monsanto after listening to the testimony of numerous expert witnesses. Well, Europe doesn't have this going on because they never let Monsanto spray Roundup on European crops. But here in the United States, we've been doing it for decades. We've been, you know, on our wheat crops, they started spraying it on our wheat crops in the late 90s, early 2000s, which was followed by an explosion of people saying, I'm gluten intolerant. I can't eat wheat anymore. I think it's Roundup. I don't think it's the wheat. But I could be wrong, but I mean, you know, this is just my theory. But the point is that this form of capitalism that, you know, rather than the precautionary principle that they have in Europe, where they say the health and welfare of society is more important than the profit of an individual corporation. Whereas in the United States, we say the profit of an individual corporation is more important than the health and welfare of society. And we are, you know, of the 18 happiest countries in the world, we're number 18, or we're number 19 this year. We were number 18 last year. We're falling. Every other one of those countries practices, I believe, the precautionary principle. I know the vast majority of them certainly do. Hamilton in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Hamilton, you wanted to get back into the topic of whether Joe Biden should announce that Stacey Abrams is his running mate?
Yeah, it's great to talk with you. I'm surprised that I got in. Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I guess the thesis of my thought is focus, and I'm very disappointed with the Democratic candidates because they allow the corporate media to herd them and to manipulate them and be pushed into a corner where they have to be a particular candidate to be viable. I know how important gender equality is and how important racial equality is, but the bottom line should be focus. Focus to win. I like Nancy Pelosi because she knows how to win and she keeps her focus.
Right.
And I am disappointed with the lack of focus.
So it sounds like what you're saying, Hamilton, is that it's more important to you to beat Donald Trump than it is to have the perfect candidate. And you want the candidate who can most effectively beat Donald Trump. And if people dilute their ability to do that, or arguably enhance their ability to do that, that should be the metric that we look at.
Yes. First, how do they like it with the current administration? They don't.
Right.
The first thing, the focus should be to win, and then all these other things can fall into place. But while he's there, it will not fall into place. We need to reclaim dignity and some semblance of truth before we can move forward as a society. And we're not going to do that with him there. We need to focus to win. That's
yeah.
the bottom line.
Yeah, very well said. Hamilton, thanks for the call. Very well said. Martin in Maple Heights, Ohio. Hey, Martin, what's on your mind?
Guten Tag, Herr Feuerstein.
Grüße Gott. Wie geht's?
Mir geht's gut. I
sure.
wanted to make a comment on socialized medicine. I lived in Germany for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
I never waited for anything.
Same here. I went to the hospital once, and we took our kids to the doctors two or three times, and it was always, you know, within days at the very most of making the phone call saying I'd like to make an appointment.
Yeah, I would walk into my house arts, which is my family doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Without an appointment, I would wait a maximum of 45 minutes, and I would get what I needed.
Yep.
If I had to see a specialist, he would write me an Ubervisum, which is a referral,
mm-hmm.
and depending on the seriousness of my illness, is depending on how quick I would see that specialist. Maybe
yep.
a day, maybe a week.
Yep.
And my question about being happier, would you be happier if you had guaranteed 6 weeks vacation every year?
As most Europeans have.
As I did. And would you be happier
yeah.
if you could not get fired from your job once you signed that Werkvertrag, your work contract,
right.
you guarantee not to get fired?
Yeah.
And would you be happier if you were sick that you got 80% of your wages paid through your health insurance company?
Yep.
And you also had choices of health insurance companies. I had three choices of three different health insurance companies.
And they were all nonprofits.
All nonprofits.
Yep.
That was the best thing I ever experienced in my life. I was in the hospital once for 6 weeks.
Whoa.
Never got a bill. Never had to pay for anything.
Yep. Yep. That's
And I enjoy my 6 weeks vacation every year.
Yep. That's how it is in Europe. Martin, thanks for sharing your story with us. That's a great one.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Nicole in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Hey Nicole, what's up? Nicole is on line one, sure, if you want to find out what's going on. Les in Puyallup, Washington. Hey Les, what's up?
Hi. Yes, I'm back again. I just wanted to make a comment about my own experiences and why people are unhappy. And with myself, it's like struggle. And I have to say, if I'm struggling, everybody else is struggling. I see it at the food bank where I work. I see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to mention quickly about the military complex, about how they've kept people poor. And when the kids have come out of school, they dangle the carrot, education, school, money, a future. And they don't follow through. It's just feeding the military complex is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to add to the comments.
Okay. Well, I think you added it very well, Les. Thanks a lot for the call. Izzy in traveling in an RV. Hey, Izzy.
I am in an RV.
Where are you traveling?
We're actually full-time.
Wow.
I've been full-time since I got
multiple sclerosis in 2009.
Oh,
and we decided to, since we couldn't afford our home anymore, we had to sell it. We decided to make the best of it. And we were both photographers, so.
See the country.
He goes out and takes pictures for me. So.
Oh, is that sweet? That's great.
He's the best. He's an amazing human being. That's not why I called, but it is about photography.
Mm-hmm.
As a photographer, when you use a person's image, if you can recognize who that person is, you have to have a model release signed by them in order to publish or use that person's image. Now,
Right. Legally
speaking, in this day and age, you know, we need to have a legal come in and talk about it, but I would think that the family members would have a right to those images.
Well, somebody earlier called in and said, I'm in favor of the pictures being released if the family members sign off on the releases. So this would be an opt-in rather than an opt-out. And that makes sense to me. I don't have a problem with that. I'm guessing that there will be some family members who are going to make the same decision Emmett Till's mother did. You know, yes, the world needs to see this.
Exactly. Now, looking at it from the perspective of somebody who's going to be viewing those pictures, there are a lot of people who've suffered some pretty serious trauma, and for them to click on their news site and immediately have those images up, you can't unsee them is the problem.
Yeah.
And so I would, just out of an act of kindness, want to see some kind of a warning ahead of time before the images are exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Just out of being kind to human beings.
But how do you do that in a newspaper or a magazine?
Yeah, I just, make a link to it, and when you open up the link, the first thing the link goes to.
No, I get that. I get that when you're online. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that in a newspaper. Yeah, I do not know the answer to that question. But
yeah. Or on network news, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, there is a spectrum of gruesome, right? And we don't need to go full gruesome. We don't need to go full disaster porn or violence porn. I think showing, well, I don't know. Izzy, this is just like one of those. It would be fascinating to have this conversation with some of the families who had survived a mass shooting. Izzy, thank you for the call, and have a great time in your RV.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls in just a moment. It's 45 minutes, coming up on 46 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, your media support group for We the People. And welcome back. Let's see here. Nikolai in Seattle. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, sir.
You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, sir. I'm first-time caller. You mentioned how Republicans are using socialism and trying to make it like a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this country really needed it here. Because I apologize, it's my second language and I was born in Russia.
You're doing a great job, Nikolai.
Yeah, thank you. So when I was still in Russia, so what Putin did with liberalism and democracy, basically the same set of tools, right? So they started use propaganda, and tried to make this, five column, people, that it's all bad, we don't need in this country in Russia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what they're trying to do here now, making this, something bad or the good thing, really, because I think people here in America are ready for socialism, not as a political ideology, but rather like from economic perspective, right?
Yeah.
Because, we definitely need this here because...
Well, and at a certain level, we need to disentangle the debate over whether we're going to have free health care and education and a strong social safety net from the debate about, the media and what kind of government we have. Because it is possible to have, as Germany did, by the way, in the 1930s, a government that does offer a national health care system and free education and is... Nazis. they literally were Nazis. So, Russia, I believe, has a national healthcare system, don't they, Nikolai?
Well, yeah, but it's in shambles, really, I would like, Americans would know more about Russia, because I see there's like a really like a petri dish, you know, like a, because democracy there was, you know, was so young after the Soviet Union collapsed. It, like, you know, people, like, you know, got this, you know, inhale, like, air of freedom. And then, you know, all these shapeshifters, basically, they came back. They said, oh, no, we're Democrats now. But then Putin came into power. And, you know, now you know where Russia is moving.
Yeah,
it's like
I think a lot of this was facilitated by the guys from the Chicago School of Economics who came in and said, you need to do shock denationalization, basically, of housing, of industries and whatnot. And, you know, that's a prescription for oligarchy, which is largely what happened. And it's what's happening right here in the United States as well, as we're privatizing everything from our public utilities to our public schools. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. But I mean, that's the role of leadership, right? So, like, because society wasn't ready for that, and the leadership was pretty much all those old commies who just, you know, they just now they, you know, got all the means to get rich, and, you know, and don't answer to people.
Yeah.
Whereas here, why I see I was following presidential campaign, you know, what Trump is. He's just resembling a Russian politician, really, to me. How he speaks, how he lies. So I would like, you know, Americans to you know, in 2020, you know, to do their best.
Okay, Nikolai, thank you for the call. And, you know, and I'm hopeful that our two countries can actually have better relations. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour, Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Well, the happiness index, I've been, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. I've been hearing this story, and the one thing that strikes me as you went through some of the statistics is the right-wing media has been telling lies about the statistics and assigning Finland statistics to us. For instance, like saying our life expectancy is 81 years, when in fact it's 78 years. And I knew that. And I thought,
wait a minute, where'd you hear this?
I heard it. Michael Medved said that yesterday.
Seriously? He just lied through his teeth to his audience?
Yes.
Wow.
And I said, I called the show to say that, and he said in 1950, or was it 54, he said our life expectancy was 64. It was actually 65 in 1950. He said, and we've added 17 years. And they would not let me come on the air to say, and that's because of Medicare.
Right.
We've added 17 years since 1950 because of Medicare and the availability of high-tech procedures since the 1980s. But the other statistic that has been denied, and this is an indication, is so when you break these out, like the infant mortality rate, talking about the, you know, the rankings, and by the way, the U.S. has fallen from number 11 to number 19. But the rankings, when you talk about 1, 2, and 3, you're not even talking, the splits aren't even close. Who was tied 5 years ago for first and second was Finland and Canada at 40 deaths per 100,000 live births. You know what ours is? It's over 600. It's over 600. So when you talk about who's first, second, third, it's Canada, Finland, and probably Japan. Those were who's always slugging it out for first, second, and third. The U.S. infant mortality rate is over 600 deaths per 100,000 live births. We're worse than Cuba, and worse. In fact, we're the worst in the westernized world.
Right.
And of course, the reason for that is the lack of prenatal care.
Yeah.
For poor women and women of color.
Yep.
That's the reason. So they talk, and you correctly, all of the top, what, it was almost all of the top 10 were all the Scandinavian countries, the ones that Bernie always talked about.
Well, and there was Costa Rica was in there, too. But I would add, it's not just a lack of prenatal care, Paul. It's also, if a pregnancy is planned, it's much more likely that you're going to have a positive outcome than if a than if a pregnancy is unplanned. And all of those countries offer comprehensive sex education in their schools and offer comprehensive access to birth control. And here in the United States, you actually have Republicans who are arguing against the availability of birth control, particularly hormone-based birth control, or IUDs, what they call, you know, abortifacients, which you and I both know is not true, but that's what they call them. And if they're not, you know, a right-wing so-called Christian zealot ideologue, you know, opposed to birth control on that basis, they're opposed to people having access to them at low cost because they're right-wing libertarian ideologues who believe that the pharmaceutical company should be able to charge whatever they damn well please and gouge us as much as they want, you know, and hey, there's demand for birth control pills. Let's jack the prices up.
Right, and then we see also the life expectancy, and this is what floors me, is in terms of, you know, the infant mortality. Canada having ours is 15 times worse. Canada and Finland are at about 40. We're over 600, but their life expectancy is higher. So how is it that when you when you cross over the border into Canada, somehow, I mean, we're talking about our essentially our neighbors, our next door neighbor.
Oh, I know, and you know, the common, I was surprised that Julio didn't use it, but the common right-wing, you know, rebuttal to that is to say, well, those countries have a more homogenous population. You know, I think that the population skew, well, with Canada maybe a little whiter than the United States, but there's not that much difference between the northern tier of states in the United States and the southern part of Canada in terms of, you know, demographic profile.
Well, one of the arguments I heard life expectancy with Canada, and Dick Morris wrote a book, strategist, advisor, whatever. He wrote a book against Obamacare about 5 years ago, and when he was confronted about the fact that the United States has a lower life expectancy than Canada, you know what his response was? He says, "Yeah, but when you filter out our infant mortality rate, ours is actually higher. So when you filter out, our babies are dying at a greater rate than ours is actually higher. Well, what if you filter out theirs? You know,
right.
Well, actually, since theirs is so low, it probably wouldn't make any difference. But see how they want to twist the statistics?
Oh, sure.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff they're doing here. And now they're outright lying about the fact, assigning Finland statistics to us and saying, yeah, ours is, that's what ours is. And this is the Trump era.
Yeah,
just lie about it.
It's the old cliche that liars, you know, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. Or I think actually the one that Donald Trump is like literally betting his presidency on was Abe Lincoln, who said, you know, you can fool some of the people all of the time, and you can fool all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. Well, Donald Trump knows he doesn't need to fool all the people all the time. All he needs to do is fool some of the people all the time. And that's this email that, you know, Fred Flintstone just got from him, saying that the Democratic Party and the fake news media, and I quote, represent a very real danger to our nation.
He only needs to fool enough people to turn the Electoral College in his favor.
Yeah.
That's the way that happened in 2016.
Yeah, yeah. It is grim stuff. It is grim stuff. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. And, you know, very well said. I mean, amazing. Sometimes I think, you know, it is such a privilege to be here with you doing this show, because I learn things from the people who call in and from the people we talk to every day. And I'm very grateful for it. So thank you. And thanks for the call. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, you know, with a whole brand new set of things to discuss. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. We all need to be participants in this process if we want to have a country, a democratic institutions that actually work. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it, and have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.